Welcome back to the Digital Orthopedics Podcast and our audio series from the 9th Annual DocSF Experience. My name is Stefano Bini, and I'm a physician at UCSF, and I'm the host of this podcast and the founder and chair of the Digital Orthopedics Conference, San Francisco. The session, aptly called Startups We Love, features a series of presentations from selected startups focusing on technological advancements in orthopedics. Dr. Claudio Diaz, an associate professor at UCSF, and Dr. Daniel Kraft, on faculty at Stanford and founder of the Next Med Conferences, will moderate the presentations. They first introduce Doug Fairbanks, the CEO at Visy, who compares the impact of X-ray technology on orthopedics to Visy's 3D scanning innovations for improving surgical precision. Following Doug, Nan Wei Gong, the CEO at Figure 8, outlines their tech-driven approach to musculoskeletal health, emphasizing the lack of data in MSK treatment and the need for objective biomechanical measurements. Finally, Mohan Giridharadas, CEO and founder of LeanTAS, talks about optimizing hospital operations using advanced mathematical models and data science to manage capacity, improve scheduling, and increase efficiency. The session underlines how the integration of deep technology, data analytics, and innovation can address long-standing challenges in orthopedics. Enjoy the talk.
My name is Claudio Diaz. I'm an associate professor here, and we're going to invite Mr. Doug Fairbanks from Visy.
Hi, I'm Doug. This is Visy, a deep tech spatial computing company. I'm very excited to be here today. There's a disclaimer. I want to take you to DocSF 1896. Did it exist back then? Maybe that was a little before our time. The reason I bring this up is interesting, and to think about what we're here doing, thinking about technology and how to improve healthcare and how to make those things come together in a meaningful way. And I want you all to think, hey, what is today about? And what are these technologies offer? And how do they make our lives better? And how do we get there? And I want to take you to a technology from 1896. In 1896, three PhDs bribed the janitor at Davidson College in North Carolina to sneak into the lab and make the first X-ray. It was a couple bullets, some coins, and a cadaver finger. I don't know who's walking around with a cadaver finger in their hand, in their pocket, but that's how it came. A couple weeks later, their professor made this X-ray. The first is if we were in 1896 and someone said, hey, we're going to use beams of light to look through your skin and tell you if you're hurt or not, what kind of impact do you think that will have? And I'll ask you that because I want you to think about opening your mind to possibilities. And now X-ray is still 125 years later, worth $14.9 billion a year. And we use it and you think about how many lives have been improved by X-ray. So I'll set that up with thank you for all having me here. Thank you, Stefano, for hosting us. I gave my first talk as the CEO of Visy at DocSF Venture, and we went on to raise oversubscribed $8.2 million round in one of the hardest times in history for startups. And I credit it to the enthusiasm that we saw from orthopedic surgeons and the boost that we got from this conference. Now, I start every conversation and I finish every conversation with a talk about surgeons. Surgeons are my customers. And they're who I care about. And here's a Bain & Co. study from 2022 that looked at interest in using robotic platforms. And of the respondents, 89% wanted to use robotics in their procedures, and 51% had adopted. Now, if you think about this, there's a huge discrepancy between interest and adoption. And we could talk about the number of reasons why that happens. I'll have you really zero in a number of ways about to think the computer systems, navigation, AR, VR systems of today. And one of the things that they all use is this ability to see the patient through trackers and pins. So that requires that we put pins in the bones and trackers that are seen by an infrared camera that shows them where the field is. And we go through this very long registration process. When I think about these procedures, I tend to think about my father. He went to get his knee replacement done and he said, Doug, what kind of surgeon did you send me to? He operated on my thigh and my ankle. What's wrong? He couldn't find my knee. And we chuckle about that, right? But if you step back, you think, hey, that's a pretty bad patient experience. And it's also a bad surgeon experience, right? Did I want to put extra holes? Did I want to put a bunch of little surgeries next to my major surgery? And how do we do better? Now, beyond the anecdotal feedback is the literature. Literature points at pin site fractures, infections, and the FDA even issued a warning that says the use of these tracking technologies could lead to patient deaths, life-threatening injuries, failed, aborted, or prolonged procedures. And so we get curious about how do we do better? And when we think about data and information and how those supplement us as surgeons and people who treat patients, we really want to think about the quality of data. But what does the computer system see? This, if my slide goes, a handful of reflections in space, very poor or limited optical data, right? And what I'm asking you to do is to see the problem that we all ignore. And at Visy, we think it's time to see the patient. Here's a 3D scan of a knee, a million data points, size, scale, color accurate. That scan came from a device that we invented. We invented a new way of doing three-dimensional scanning, and it gets very accurate and very precise, and you can see it come in a bunch of different embodiments. We have IP, we're securing it around the world, we're really excited about the pathway forward. We think a lot about our patients, and we think a lot about the surgeon's experience. Here's a scan done of a knee in an infrared. You got OR lights. What kind of hassle would it be to turn off the lights in the room? So we worked around it. We get a scan like this. Here's an anterior hip approach, Charlie DeCook, one of the most innovative guys that I know, awarded me the Shark Tank at Anterior Hip Foundation, I think 2 years ago. On this video, we looked down at a hip incision of a very small female patient. We're able to get enough tissue to co-register their planoids, the size of a quarter or a half dollar. In that quarter to half dollar size, we get 12 to 14,000 data points, easily enough to create a co-position to the preoperative image, allowing you to operate against the tissue. You know, we think about 3D data, and the speaker before said vision solved. Well, vision actually is not 100% solved, because getting really fine, very accurate to FDA standard vision is really challenging. But when we think about our precision, we get really excited. Right now, you may take 40, 100, or even 300 points on a trace method that takes time through a procedure. On the right, you see a Visy registration, 376,000 data points in a fraction of a second. Orders of magnitude greater precision. So we get excited about this, and we think back to surgeons. And the surgeons tell us simplifying registration would be huge. Pinless robotics would be the holy grail. We need robotic systems to save time and tissue. Pinless robotics would be the holy grail. So I promised Stefano I'd show up something new, and I plan to do it. I'm really excited about the development of the team and what we continue to push at. And I brought you something today that the marketing team refers to it as proof of concept. I, having worked in this industry for long enough, refer to this as seismic. I hope it is, at least. So what we've done is been able to move our software and our hardware to a place that we can go from registration to a place where we can really track the patient during tissue. And so no one has seen this video before, I promise. Nobody outside of my office is the ability to do continuous anatomic auto tracking, the ability to use a three-dimensional camera to track the tissue during the procedure in a way that's accurate enough that it makes sense for a procedure and can stay within the constraints of the cost of the system. And here it is. We put a dot over it because the device changes shape and skin regularly. But what you see here is a camera that is doing a bunch of things. It's looking at the field. It's finding where a knee is, right? Where is a knee? What is a knee? It's then making sense of a preoperative image, and it's doing that dozens of times a second. So in this procedure in our office, and then later on the teams and four cadavers today, the system is looking at the tissue and over and over. Does anybody want to see that again? Nope. Wasn't that compelling? There it is. So vision to be able to solve for painless procedures, and that's what we're really excited about. Now, at the beginning, I talked about what an exciting thing would be to see a technology and be behind it and maybe be part of its history. And at the end of this talk, I'll tell you that we would like for you all, if this excites you or if this is interesting for you, to be part of our vision and our part of our journey and bring this to reality. This is Visy. We believe there's more to see. If you can sign up for a demo online and you can reach out to us, we'd love to have you. Thank you so much. My name is Doug Fairbanks.
Thank you so much. I have a question for you. I've been looking at the use of the concept of reverse engineering in the surgeries we do. And there is one field that probably you should focus, and I would love to work with you, is revision knees. All the knee surgeons here knows that once you're removing the implants, the scenario is completely different to what your plan was before, even though you use 3D images or whatever. So I've been exploring this, and my first question to you is how this is different to the use of 3D scans. Because with 3D scans, you can also reconstruct this, have real-time images, and the most important thing, you're not invading the surgical field, and you're working at least from 1 meter behind, get the information right away. And my question to you, are you guys exploring this in revision knee? If you're not, we're going to be partners on this.
Yeah, certainly happy to talk about it, and absolutely an indication for use in this case. One of the challenges in revision, say a knee, for example, is that, first of all, if you get a preoperative CT to go operate against a patient, you then have to use metal refractive elimination software that essentially moves all the metal there, but you don't get to see whatever happens to the bone after you extract the implant. So does the cement take a bunch of bone with it, or does it slide right off? And so real-time assessment is absolutely inside of us and something that we're interested in, happy to talk to you about it more, but a great indication for use. So we are a 3D scanner, but what we've done is we've gone to the type of 3D scanning that is the most accurate, and we've attacked the fact that it's very slow traditionally. So we've gotten hyper fast at the most accurate type of 3D. You get a 3D scanning three different ways. I think I gave that talk last year, but I'm happy to discuss more. Revision, short answer, yes, we love it.
Right, and super quick question. Are you starting to build data sets from these? So the future will be, you know, to the GPS of these surgeries and revisions?
Yeah, so you instantly say, and I'm glad to go to any conference and talk about AI, and we talk about there's some play for us and better for their potential in the FDA clearance if we don't use AI right now. But one of the things that you do get to is that with a real-time optical scan of tissue, you get a unique data layer. And when we think about training these tools, training different AI or machine learning tools, the data sets are really valuable. So absolutely in our wheelhouse to be collecting data in the real-time scans of the patient. We actually started as a brain shift company, so we do think a lot about how the brain shifts when you do a craniotomy.
Awesome. Thank you, Doug. All right. Next, we're going to hear from Figure 8 and Nan Wei Gong. Nan.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me here. This is such an exciting conference. My name is Nan Wei Gong, and I'm the founder and CEO of Figure 8. I'm here to share a little bit of how we're tackling the MSK health problem. We are mainly solving the problem for the lack of data in a huge part of MSK. Now, not everyone is having the knee surgery. There's one in two of us have some type of MSK conditions. It's one of the top three healthcare spending categories. And the problem is no standard of care. You think about diabetes, you think about cardiovascular. It's so easy to think about a number. You think about a digital measurement. You think about, you know, am I doing okay? Am I not doing okay? But when you think about the physical exam, when I say I have back pain, I go to a doctor, and this is what you get on the right. The tools that exist in clinics today, mostly in physical therapy clinics, for example, it's, you know, invented 100 years ago. They have a goniometer, manual muscle testing, the visual analog scale, which I call it, you know, signs by emoji. It's just really hard for all the surgeons in the room. Like, you don't have a good way to know whether your patient is doing better after surgery, not scientifically. So we started a company 7 years ago with the goal of the digital transformation of front observations, like the clinical, you know, physical exam notes, what you see on the left, to how we can measure our movement function objectively. I am an engineer by training. I have a PhD in sensor technology from the MIT Media Lab. Our lab started creating wearable technologies from the 90s, early 2000. And we know so much more about our cars than our bodies. And there's just no way for us to just get a test and see how our movement health is doing. So we started thinking about like, how do we convert a biomechanics lab into something that can be easily administered in a clinic? It's affordable and have a business model around it, so it's scalable. So our product really is, there's the sensor component. Think of it as an EKG or an ECG. You go to your clinic. We design the assessment based on the body parts. We have different placement activities, biomarkers that's most related to different segments and then conditions. And then there's a summary report. Currently, we have these assessments that covers about 75% of the injuries. Feel free to read our white paper from the QR code. And what we do is, my background is really in consumer electronics. So the goal is to create an experience that's very easy, very fluid through a tablet. You collect information, upload it, and then you can view it immediately within about 15 minutes. So we have a group of engineers that works with clinicians on developing something that's very easy to understand. A is how we're thinking about the future now that we have the infrastructure built out and we have tens of thousands of real life patients that's going through our system just this year alone. Is that now we have the biomarkers, we also connect with the EHR systems, we have longitudinal data of recovery, we have patient-reported pain, but in 3D movements, we have progress notes from the clinician. And then we think about it, whoa, all of the problems, many speakers talk about the burden of note-taking and documentation. So we are creating like an AI progress report that is also generating by our platform and help this to be integrated to the EHR. We also work on revenue cycle management for our customers. So that's a full service, a suite of software that allows people to collect data, generate meaningful notes and progress report, and also submit it to communicate to the patient and the insurance companies. Now, my background is in engineering, so I am such a geek about data, and this really excites me. Now, when we think about tens of thousands of patients in our database, we start looking, dissecting all of the information. So what we collect is 3D, and also we collect muscle functions during a recovery. So with all of the data sets, normally each motion, we have like 14 to 18 biomarkers that we collect, and you start seeing cluster of injured and healthy data sets in a cluster around different ICD-10 codes. And we started being able to generate in multiple dimensions, including time and how a person recover over time. So the dots, this yellow mustard dot, is a representation of someone that's going through a recovery journey. And what we're able to do is we actually have a way of comparing recovery and prediction of someone's recovery compared with medical guidelines in a very easy way of just a reference for the insurance adjuster, or in some of our cases, we work with large employers. So with the case manager and with their employers describing, hey, how long will this person reach maximum medical improvement? When can they go back to work? Because that's really, really important for these injured workers that we work with. So what we're working on really is, how can we create standardization? How can we work across physical therapy and now work? How can we integrate into payer workflow so that people can get these digital information and improve the care? We work with many different physical therapy brands. Right now, we have 180 different brands sign up, more than 3,000 clinics across the U.S. So the data-driven treatment decisions really improved outcomes. So people are using this to also promote how their service is better and differentiated from their peers. So a little bit about us. We are 7 years in the business. We raised about $42 million to really bring this to market. And our management team really is focused not only on technology, but in insurance, because a payment drives behavior. So we really want to create a platform and ecosystem that allows us to go to market, have a way of collecting a lot of information. Now we're branching outside of physical therapy and really want to have more conversation to share about how we view the data and how can we elevate the MSK healthcare together. Feel free to reach out to connect. And thank you so much for having me here today.
I love this. You're going from analog to digital and you get what you measure. And it's been so hard to measure things outside the clinic. My father had told me replacement last February. I'm like, how are you doing? Like, well, he's walking a little better now. But do you see the era where you start to hyper segment even before, say, a total knee replacement or hip, and then guide what's most appropriate? And how would you see this changing things in the operative space?
So the thing is, sometimes you don't know if the rehab is working and it's a long, painful process. Sometimes patient-reported outcome is not directly linked to the actual physiological change in the recovery in soft tissues. So we see a lot of, we have multiple clinical study that is comparing the patient-reported outcome versus the actual biomechanics improvement. And so we will know whether the treatment is effective or not, whether the patient is like, you know, really adhere to the program. And we can also select better treatment programs because there are so many out there. So it's just data driven, and we want to be the platform that provides the data and have a way of just getting it everywhere. Thank you.
How do you then, the bigger challenge for the clinician, they're overwhelmed by data. They want the insights. Or do you have a, let's say if you have a panel of patients post-op, do you have a dashboard that would sort of identify the folks who are going in the wrong direction?
We provide a companion. So we don't, as a company, we don't provide those decisions. I have to have a conversation with the FDA about that. So we don't, but it would be a data-driven insight for the providers to really guide all the decision-making as opposed to just asking you, how do you feel today?
I have a question for you. We always look at the performance of ourselves as surgeons, the performance of our patients, but we never look at the performance of the physical therapist.
Absolutely.
So the question is, with your system, are we able to track who are the ones who are the best players, or the ones that we should not send our patients to them?
Yeah, we don't think ourselves as a medical device company. We're really a data company that we work with multiple players, including payers, employers, and also all the referral decisions from our partners. So that is a big topic that we want to work through on. How do we bring awareness to this community? And how can we get the data back to the surgeon so you know that you're referring to the PTs that performs better and you can easily see the progress of your patient?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Last company in the session is Lean Toss, if I'm saying that right. And we're going to hear from Mohan.
What could possibly go wrong? Be the last guy before lunch and immediately following MIT robotics and other complicated things. Anyway, let me give it a shot. I'm Mohan Giridharadas. I'm the founder and CEO of Lean Toss. So let me quickly tell you who are we and what do we do. Math plus data science to unlock capacity in the health system. Health systems operate on the edge of capacity, which is a permanent rush hour, permanent gridlock sort of a mode everywhere you look. And that's kind of what we do. We're in 1,200 hospitals or cancer centers around the country. 14 of the top 20. So if you rattled off the names of the health systems you admire the most, Sloan Kettering, UCSF, MD Anderson, Stanford, et cetera, Johns Hopkins, we're in probably 80% of them, one or more of our products. It's about nearly 200 health systems, 49 of the 50 states. I had no idea Vermont was that stubborn. Despite our best efforts, we've got nothing in Vermont. I've got a sales guy who lives in Boston, and I've made it his performance objective for 2025 to deliver Vermont. We wrote a book, Better Healthcare Through Math. You can find it alongside the sleep meds at Amazon. Happy to send anyone a copy if you drop me an email. Lots of credentials and all of that. KLAS created a new category called Best in Class in Capacity Management, and we scored the highest on it. We got 100% across the board for it. So what exactly do we do? We've got three products. I'll give you the 30-second version of each one. IQ for Infusion Centers optimizes the flow of patients through chemotherapy. Ran cancer at Stanford back then, still runs cancer now, is an ex-GE guy. And he said, answer me this, why is it that my infusion center looks like a train station in the middle of the day? The chairs are full, the nurses are frazzled, the waiting rooms are bursting. But early morning and late afternoon, it's a ghost town. The reality is it's very complicated. Oncologists practice different days of the week. They have different patient profiles. Patients come and go. Chemotherapy is a 6 to 8 week regimen. You need the chair, the pump, the nurse, and the drug to deliver chemo. If any one of them is not there, chemo doesn't happen. Scheduling it is being done on whiteboards. We came up with the math. The math is complicated. The solution set is a number with more than 100 zeros behind it. We came up with the algorithms. We implemented it at Stanford, and it was lightning in a bottle. We took the wait times down by 50%. Capacity went up by 15%. Nurses started getting lunch, and we scaled it. So back then it was one infusion center, 50 chairs. Today we control 750 infusion centers, 15,000 chairs. 30% of the chemo capacity in the US happens on a chair on our platform. The second product was IQ4 operating rooms. We went to UC Health in Colorado and they wanted to solve the operating rooms problem. We didn't have an operating room solution. So they held their noses and implemented infusion. And once it implemented, they said, wow, these guys know how to make math work. And we built the OR product to unlock block capacity, improve utilization of ORs. So back in 2016, one hospital, 50 ORs. Today, nearly 6,000 ORs at 700 hospitals, a platform. Our newest one is inpatient flow, about 25,000 beds in 80 hospitals. We work the math of improving the flow of a patient through an inpatient unit. If you think about it, hotels have it right. They kick you out at noon and they don't let you get in until 4 o'clock. What have they done? They've made the departure vector happen before the arrivals vector. What do hospitals do? All the arrivals happen in the morning. EDs are boarded overnight. Surgeries start at 7 a.m. When do departures happen? No one's ever left a hospital before dinner time. So all the departures are at night. All the arrivals are in the morning. That would work great if you had thousands of extra beds. When you don't, every single day, you open with EDs boarded, PACUs boarded, patients in hallways waiting for a bed. 3 hours go by. Somehow the staff put their head down and get it done. And like Groundhog Day, it happens again tomorrow. And this is the recurring problem that we solve. So here's the reality. I'm going to spend the next 5 minutes getting you one step deeper. We're not a company that just looks at numbers from the EHR and gives you dashboards, because dashboards and five things. The problem is healthcare has settled for simple-minded arithmetic. Everything is a simple-minded ratio. Patients per nurse, beds per nurse, block utilization, A divided by B. Simple-minded arithmetic works at the left end of the scale. It hits the fan when you get to the right end of the scale. It's all nonlinear math when you get into the edge of capacity. And so everything deteriorates. The reality in Kingman's formula and queuing is high variability means it hits the fan sooner. Healthcare is the ultimate in variability. The same patient, the same provider, each encounters a different event. No two things are alike. Sample size of one. And so, of course, it hits the fan faster. So here's the way to think about it. Think about your favorite freeway at rush hour and the same freeway outside of rush hour. Let's suppose we have three metrics, the commute time, the accident recovery time, and how many people got delayed. Every metric is 4 times worse to 5,000 times worse. But here's the good news. You don't have to solve the entire problem. What happens on a bank holiday? Your commute time is a third. Not everybody stayed home. Only the bankers stayed home. But you know what? That's 10% of the people, but it's the right 10%. It's the kind who work from 8 to 5. What a pain in the ass on the freeways during rush hour. So you get them to stay home, it's great. 10% of the discharges. Find the 10% of the OR block minutes. Find the 10% of the chemo schedules. That's what we do. My previous life at McKinsey, I ran a lean manufacturing practice in North America and in Asia. And what's interesting is when you take asset-heavy service businesses, they're a different beast. So take UPS. Demand is hard to predict. UPS doesn't know that on my way out of here, I'll buy something in San Francisco, put it in a box and ship it to my daughter in LA to arrive tomorrow. They didn't know about it now and they have to get it to her 12 hours from now. That's hard to know. Supply is complicated. It looks like a package being delivered from a shop, but it takes vans and trucks and conveyor belts and sorting hubs and planes and delivery drivers and ramps to do it. And here's the reality. In manufacturing, you can fake it with inventory. If I'm running a terrible manufacturing plant, but every time you ship me an order, I've got inventory, I can fool you into thinking I'm running a good plant. In service, you can't. Supply and demand has to match minute for minute. Who are you going to put on the shelf, the cardiologist or the patient? You can't put either on the shelf. And so what do? They build incredibly sophisticated things. Having spent 5 years inside the belly of Delta Airlines, yield management is a thing. There's 1,000 people at Delta who work on yield management. Here's how it works. 200 people per plane, 5,000 flights a day. It's 1 million seats in the and 50 million seats for grabs. They know the performance of every one of those 350 million seats every minute of every day. Right now, they can tell you the October 1st, 6 a.m. Jacksonville to New York is running hot. You know what? Let's jack up the pricing. No free tickets, no free upgrades because it's running hot. That's how sophisticated they are. They build models and they augment in real time. So let's bring this back to healthcare. We've got the same issue. Demand is hard to predict. I could walk into the UCSF Cancer Center and get a cancer diagnosis, and the next 3 months I'm going to have 100 appointments that neither I nor they knew about. So demand's hard to predict. Supply takes a lot of people, nurses, staff, skills, and they too have to manage supply and demand. What has healthcare done? Actually, very little. Clinical advancement in this country has been remarkable over the last 30 years. Robotic surgery, genomics, precision medicine. Operationally, paper records went onto an EHR built by companies that were invented 45 years ago. Epic and Cerner were started in 1979. And that's it. Two people chat and make an appointment. Bob Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Who ran demand stochastic models? Who ran supply constrained optimization? Nobody. ORs are assigned based on political power. Dr. Smith, your chair of our country club, should give its tennis courts to its pros, not how a $20 million asset should be allocated. Analytics are based on average math, block utilization, silliest metric ever, because you get the surgeons penalized for turnover time and anesthesia delays and all kinds of stuff that they had nothing to do with. Average math is wrong math. If my head's in the freezer and my feet are in the oven, on average, my body's at a fine temperature. And finally, it's all on dashboards. Scoreboards don't win football games. The 49ers can't distribute a scoreboard to all the fans and say, keep polishing it and maybe we'll win the game. So distributing a dashboard to the whole hospital doesn't do anything. Better plays win football games. So you have to run better predictions, better prescriptions, and that's what we do. I won't drag you through all of this, but the two concepts are matching and linking. You match supply, you match demand at a deep level of understanding. Health systems say that's hard to do. We say yes, but look what Uber has to do. Every minute of every day, on every street corner, everywhere in the world, they have to match the demand for a ride, which, by the way, you didn't give them more than over 10 minutes heads up, with a supply which is made up of a car that doesn't belong to them and a driver who doesn't work for them, and they have to make it happen in 10 minutes. They're not looking around saying, John, go give Bob a ride. They build demand models, time of day of week, seasonality, traffic. They build supply models, who drives where and when. They change the dealer driver incentives to bring them out of the way. That's the level of math it takes and the level of intervention to make supply and demand match. And that's what all our products do. The second idea is one of linking. Healthcare has actually grown up as a series of completely disconnected services that are just strung together. Labs are a thing, clinics are a thing, surgeries are a thing. There are entire classes of mathematics called directed acyclic graph theory, network theory, topology theory to solve this problem. What does healthcare do? Pretend the problem doesn't exist. John, you've got an appointment at 10, come in at 9 for your labs and we'll squeeze you in for your procedure at 11. Ignoring the math doesn't make it go away. I could ignore gravity and keep throwing my phone up in the air. It's going to hit the ground every time. So the math shows up every time. And healthcare powers its way through it and pretends the math doesn't exist. And that's kind of how operations work in healthcare. By contrast, just so you know, Delta will spend 3 months every summer building the connected flight schedule. You'd think it's easy, right? San Francisco to Chicago is one flight. Chicago to New York's another flight. You've got to string them together. Well, that's a hard problem. Planes have to come out of rotation. Crews have to come out of rotation. Jet bridges are of different sizes. Terminal layouts are different. Demand signals change. The traffic from Wisconsin to New York in the summer is different than in the winter. So based on all of that, they have to come up with the rotation. That's how hard the problem is. And so this is what healthcare is doing. So what does it take? Smart predictions. Predictions are nice. They're not enough. I can predict the sun will rise in the east tomorrow. It'll be accurate. Doesn't do anything. You got to prescribe actions. We automate the workflows. 30% of the frontline staff spends their time doing stuff that a seventh grader can do. Send a text message, pull this number, cut and paste it into an Excel spreadsheet, go into a meeting and report that you've got 24 beds, 18 of which are full, 4 of which will get filled later, and 2 of which will leave. This is how the Egyptians did stone counting 30 years ago. That's the math we rely on for operations. And you got to do change management. Healthcare has got the, we've always done it this way, and so we'll keep doing it this way. Well, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And so you've got to get people to do things differently, and that's kind of what we do. So where are we headed? Where we're headed is thinking of it as a network. What's green is commercially available. What's yellow is what we're working on. We think the opportunity is enormous. It's hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in even mid-sized hospitals. And we've got case studies from all of our customers reporting it. We think you've got to optimize the nodes before the edges. When you think about this as a network flow, Amazon makes its warehouses automated before it does drone delivery. Cisco will make its routers bigger before it makes its pipes fatter. Healthcare solves the problem upside down. And coordinators who coordinate the coordinators, because they're running out of capacity at the nodes and they're trying to push patients through. If you had infinite capacity, say 1,000 ORs and 10,000 beds, patients would wander through everything just fine. There'd be no need for coordination. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to unlock the nodes.
All right. Fantastic. We're out of time. Unless you have one question you want to ask. Well, this is brilliant vision. The quick, in 20 seconds, how do you implement this in a system? It's so complex. You can get airline pilots to show up, but how do you get pilot nurses and patients to coordinate?
We implemented, it's a software as a service thing. So it runs in the Amazon cloud. We can go live on any one of our products in a matter of 8 to 10 weeks. We implemented OR across 53 hospitals in Providence, 475 ORs in 7 months. So we can do this very, very quickly. And we assign a dedicated team to each customer as they come live to do the change management, the training. We take all of the burden on that and we don't charge extra for it. It's just part of the service.
Thank you very much. It's actually LeanTask came to the first DocSF. They were a small company, a couple of mathematicians out of Stanford. They joined us and now they're anymore. But yet another one of the companies that we take full credit for their success.
Yes. Customer number three in the cancer product.
Yes. Yeah.
Back in 2015, 2016, and you still use it across all your centers. We run all your interviews.
It's outstanding. We love it. Thank you so much. It was a masterclass on how to run things. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Digital Orthopedics Podcast and hope you'll make a note to join us for the next Digital Orthopedics Conference San Francisco in October. Take care. Bye.